It also tells about the birth of a new moon, and about the Earth shifting its axis, which would give your planet eternal springtime, a mild, pleasant climate without marked changes. Ready for more? Shoot. It seems this planet faces great deluges. Every symbol in the Great Pyramid indicates water. After all, this is the dawning of the Age of Aquarius. These floods will be caused by the polar ices melting and raising the sea level. Finally, between 1987 and September 17, 2001, the pyramid points to 5 years of collective madness and confusion. After that, life will slowly get back to normal with a new geography, a new topography, a new moon, new thoughts, and a new religion with a messiah who will be the same as the one who was before. Christ, of course. The new era will begin, but the Jewish race will no longer be on Earth. You're free to choose whether to believe it or not. After all, these are only taken from the pyramid. But I'd like you to take a couple of minutes to analyze this. So far, the pyramid has been delivering significant dates accurately throughout the whole Adamic era. Do you think that at the end it's going to fail? I can't wait to get this book you're talking about. You can get it here in lima.middle.kanai? I'll get one as soon as I get back then. You say this book gives these dates and that they were taken from every bend, corridor and angle in that pyramid. Ah, that's exactly what I've said. Middle. What is this about the Jews? Are the Jewish race as well recorded in the Great Pyramid? When you read the book, you'll see in the wings and plans of the whole system a block off red GNN.ite that symbolizes the Jews. As you go along, you will see Team Eva present red granite block. You've also said the Jewish prophets took most of their information from the Great Pyramid to write the Bible. Yes. The pyramid and the Bible do not contradict each other. On the contrary, they are paralleled. Trademark only difference is chronology. The prophets don't give due dates. The pyramid does. Give me a few examples. Read Daniel 12, 2 and 12. This prophecy of Daniel could very well be meant for these times. Remember that Israel is now a nation and the purification could be the sufferings that they underwent under Hitler's Germany, or maybe some more yet to come. Remember our conversation about the Antichrist? You are. Another mass murder attempt. Now read Luke 21, 24 and 25. And they shall fall by the edge of the sword, and shall be led away captive into all nations, and Jerusalem shall be trodden down of the Gentiles, until the times of the Gentiles be fulfilled. And there shall be signs in the sun, and in the moon, and in the stars, and upon the earth distress of nations, with perplexity, and the sea and the waves roaring. What could this mean in plain 20th century language, Chicho? Maybe Israel is going to be the fuse to ignite the dynamite stick. The heat is on all over Palestine. Maybe the Gentiles he referred to meant all the Goyim who are constantly fighting to get to Jerusalem, or the ones who had it. And if Jerusalem is now more in the hands of the Israelis, it symbolizes that the Gentile period already took place, which will leave you only the rest of the prophecies to the end of the 2000 years since Christ. Every time a millennium comes, people get uneasy because they think something extraordinary will happen. That's happening now, but not in a collective way. The one Jewish Talmud, for instance, talks about 2000 years that are empty, and those are the ones of the Messiah. At the same time, Enoch's book speaks of 6 days, that must mean 6 millenniums, after which there will be a seventh. According to Haberman's work, Enoch came into the picture around the year 987 BC of the Hebrew chronology. 1,000 years later, Abraham appeared as the man of God for the Jewish race, and 1,000 years after that, King Solomon's temple was built. In the fourth millennium, Christ was born upon the earth. The Middle Ages marks the fifth millennium, in which humanity lived under the lowest concepts of culture and beliefs. Now that we're about to end the sixth millennium, we have only to wait to see what happens. Now Moses probably knew all these secrets. He was familiar with the interior of the Great Pyramid. He read and understood the texts, since he knew how to interpret the symbolism of the corridors and chambers. After all, isn't he the one who wrote the first five books of the Bible? That's right. You know, when I met you and you told me that we would be talking about the Great Pyramid, I never thought it would be like this. The chronology of the pyramid has approximately 6,600 terrestrial years recorded. Those labyrinths were subjected to chronological systems. Once again, these are scientific studies based on the chronological systems found there. I promise you, as soon as I get back to Lima, I'll get the Benavides book. I'll only be able to get it in Spanish, I guess. Does that matter? Not at all. Look, if it's in black and white and scientifically supported, as you say, I don't care if it's written in Timbuktuish. I'll find a way to get the meaning of it. That's the spirit. If I get to study these things as you've asked me, would I be able to understand what's written there? Yes. And there's no better way to tune into Christ's teachings, other than getting to know the man personally. And when you study these things, let your heart be the judge. I told you, he's the one who is linked to the stars and he's definitely coming back as promised to collect his people from the earth. Will I have to worship him and call him my Lord and Savior? Not necessarily. All you have to do to get the wisdom is cultivate your spirit. When you do that, you'll feel some changes taking place within your soul. Like what? You'll become more tolerant, you'll have the strength to overcome hard times. If you take the time to read and then write, the same divine force that Christ called his Father in heaven will come upon you, and you'll be given the wisdom to understand it. This divine spark, which is your gift of life, lives within you. Is that what's mean by the words, man is made in the image of God? Exactly. Now I have a personal message for you. Towards the end of 1975, or the first part of 1976, when the man you work for is assassinated, you're going to be so shattered you'll feel like saying to hell with everything. But I ask you to remember these moments, and in the name of Christ, go ahead, continue with your book. Even if you encounter many difficulties, a change will have taken place in you. By then, you'll have most of your information about Christ, and nobody will be able to tell you anything to make you feel that the gods are not with you. I'm getting the feeling that you really believe I'm going to love Jesus Christ. Why shouldn't you? You seem bright enough to understand humility. Getting to know Christ is only being able to practice his teachings in a humble way. That doesn't mean you have to give up the joy of being alive. It'll be even better, because you'll be contented to have found out that Christ will give you the keys to eternal life. All that just by loving God and your fellow human beings. That's all you have to do. You're saying I can get to know Christ as a man. Let's say I get to know that he really existed, and that he performed miracles. What assurance will I get that he is the Son of God? Here's where your faith comes in. You'll have to believe in something which cannot be scientifically proven. I do now. I've learned to know my spirit as a third force. That alone led me to this eternal thought of creation, or the vibratory center of the universe. It's funny you mentioned Edgar Cayce earlier, because he speaks of the same kind of God, also as a force, but he calls it being part of a collective thought. Cayce seems to be speaking on behalf of that collective thought. Very good, Chicho. He's the one who is going to help you understand Christ as an Essene. In the mid-40s, the Dead Sea Scrolls were found in some caves. They were filled with information about the Essenes. That famous Sermon on the Mount was inspired in the words of the Dead Sea Scrolls. How were they found? Do you know who the Bedouins are? Arabs, nomads, people without a land of their own. These people were merchants and smugglers that used to travel all over Palestine while it was in the hands of the British troops. They happened to camp about 14 miles from Jerusalem in some caves near the Dead Sea. That's where the Dead Sea Scrolls were found. They date back to about 150 years BC. This discovery is surely the link between the New and Old Testaments in the Bible. God as a third force, knowing the teachings of Moses and those of the Great Pyramid. Why were the Essenes so quiet and mysterious about their way of life? because they didn't want to be bothered with a lot of explaining about their knowledge and spiritual level. Imagine talking to a stick to the law of Moses Pharisee about the atom, protons, electrons, anionas, anionites, and God as the vibratory center of the universe. You've heard of the Hermetic sects? Hermetic, meaning closed to the public. Then why did Christ go to the crowds and tell them he was the Son of God, and perform miracles? What right did he have to disclose Hermetic information? Because the kingdom of heaven isn't Hermetic. When Jesus found out he was the one man who could fully understand the power and glory of God, the Christ consciousness, he chose to get to work by telling everyone that faith in God and love for one another are the keys to the kingdom of heaven. Remember when he said, "My kingdom is not of this world?" Meaning not of this planet Earth. Of course. He was the prime example of loving everyone, the one man with the power to cast out demons. Now that you mention demons, we haven't talked about the devil yet. What do you mean by demons? Demons are the servants of Satan. If you want to talk about the devil, we might as well do it now. We've already established that the devil isn't a man with a tail and horns, just as the angels of God are humans like you and me. The same way with demons, they are humans, walking your streets everywhere. The devil, or evil forces, are also energy anionas and anionites that work according to physical laws and mutations. Witchcraft, voodoo, black magic, are all ways of channeling anionas and anionites as powers of the third force. These demons can also perform miracles. Remember that flick, The Exorcist? Yes, it was great. Why is the devil gaining so much popularity lately? I guess because people who are misguided, tired, and feeling abandoned by their churches, don't have enough strength to turn themselves onto the pleasures of eternal life. They seek other kinds of pleasures that give them immediate results, something that seems more meaningful to them. This is a royal chance for Satan, who is the master of deceit, to put his stamp on them. How does he operate? How is he going to be the world's master? This is the work of thousands of years. Satan knows and understands eternal life. He feeds from the uneven vibes generated by greed, thirst for power and money, and from the unscrupulousness in people who would do anything to be better off than others. They plan and scheme the next move to deceive or cut the throats of their fellow man for a fat bank account, furs, sex. They kill each other on the street. This soul thoughts of evil. It's a chemistry that moves in that frequency, constant fear, nervousness, paranoia, negativism. It has to be that way because we have to have the balance in the cosmos. Christ is the representation of the God of creation, and Satan is the representative of destruction, using the same MO always with the same plot. He attacks your weakest, most vulnerable spot. If you're greedy, and the thirst for wealth overpowers the forces of your scruples or spiritual feelings, then you are Satan's prey. The other day I remember thinking about big cities where there's crowding, crime, terrorism, violence, muggings, and death. That must be the work of Satan. Yes, but Satan not only has demons on the streets, they're also in business, politics, public offices, big international corporations, thrones, religious cults, governs. Sodom is present today in some of your bigger cities. People are seeking new ways to turn on. They have forgotten about God. Just as in the two doomed biblical cities, they got to the point of going against nature as far as sex is concerned. They were destroyed by fire. The Sodomite cities of your day will be destroyed by water, and Satan is going to be sent to prison for 1,000 years. Where does Satan come in when it comes to terrorism, racial outbursts, bombings, hijacking of planes, things that are instigated by political motives? He's behind the world political scenes. That's what a lot of people say, but no one does anything to stop it. I don't think there's anything anyone can do. We are all free to choose our own destinies, which force we want to be a part of. In these matters there's no in-between. It's either or. This is precisely why Christ had to come to this planet. to show you with his exemplary life how to defeat the forces of evil. Come again? The sacrifice of Christ is the only way he had left to demonstrate by example that death is the entrance to eternal life. When you know and practice Christ's teachings, your forehead will be sealed in such a way that the dark forces can't get to you. On the contrary, you'll be able to perform exorcisms and demons will flee from you. That sounds far out. The concept is clear. We're dealing with two forces that we've seen as vibratory frequencies. You had to work a little to get to the point of being relaxed and calm enough to see your Ananias and Ananias. But thanks to the same knowledge that makes Christ the Son of God, you're now able to take your spirit out of your body. That's another thing I have to thank you for. Since I started astral traveling, I'm not afraid of death anymore. Why should you be, if now you can actually, literally, die at will? Rama, this makes sense. When you do your research and get to know Christ as a human being, you'll love him. You won't be able to help it, because you'll find he's 100 times better than your favorite teacher. You'll realize Christ's power and glory is so mighty that it can reach everyone equally. You'll see this man mingling with crowds in the streets, making sense to people, trying to make his disciples understand that power and glory are not bombings and political terrorism, but to love and forgive one another. He put many hours work into his task. As a man, he's fascinating, a character who worked hard, had a good appetite, and even got emotional at times. Yeah, that's the sort of thing I'd love to learn. What was he like when he was off the air, off camera? There are passages in the Bible that can be corroborated by other sources in the Roman Chronicles, which were the newspapers of that time, report, military literature, census, and other historical documents. Give me an example. Take the damnation of the fig tree in Matthew 21:18. One morning Jesus got up hungry and went looking for figs from a nearby fig tree. It wasn't fig season, so there were no figs. He said a couple of things to the tree, one of them being to the effect that you will dry up and no more fruit will come from you. His disciples heard the curse, and that night when they returned to the campsite they saw that the tree had dried up. His divine power did a number on the poor fig tree. That's right. The vibes were absorbed by the plant. There's not much I can tell you about Satan, except that it's an ever-present vibration. The way to identify it is to know Christ's teachings in your heart. That way you'll make intelligent choices, comparisons and studies. Then the day will come when you find yourself loving your enemy. That's when you will automatically have the seal of God on your forehead, and your name will be written in the book of life. You and I doing this little project is going to be a call to a few people in the name of Christ. There are many, however, who are going to come out and say that this is the work of the devil. Before the end of this year, you'll be told that you met Satan on these mountains. What am I supposed to do about it when it happens? Nothing, just listen. I'll be right there with you. How? In spirit. You'll be facilitating me your Ananias, and you and I will be one spirit. How will I know you're there? When someone actually comes out and says it, that will be your cue. Will it be in public? I get the image of a room full of people, like a big, round conference table. Before the end of the year. That's only a few months away. Oh, by the way, as of the 22nd of this month my mission was accomplished. You are all that is holding me in Peru. How long are you going to detain me? How much time do you have? I don't have to be in the United States until the middle of October. I know, but you'd better leave before October 3rd, because something is going to happen here in Peru. It would be best for you to go. We won't be seeing one another for a long time. If you say so. I'm going to miss these sessions with you, because afterwards I always feel fulfilled. Maybe tomorrow you and I could take a ride to Huancayo or La Oya. I need to call Lima to check my plane reservations and things like that. I reminded Rama that before my departure she still owed me a session about the nation in this world and a race of people. It was all we needed to complete our original list. We went into the water for about an hour, then had lunch, finishing by mid-afternoon. We drove to some nearby fields and made ourselves comfortable. As we were talking and enjoying the scenic view from a grassy hill, a group of men appeared, walking over the crest of one of the hills. Rama said it was her space brothers and went to meet them. I could only see them at a distance, but I saw they had no hair on their heads and that two of them were tall. They were all dressed in the same type of robe Rama had worn the day she'd stood on the rock, bathed in golden light. As I watched Rama talking to her friends, I became very edgy. Even though I couldn't get a good look at them from where I was sitting, I could see they more or less resembled my previous ideas of what someone from outer space might look like. I never spoke to them, but I could hear them speak to me in my mind, and I felt they understood me. They seemed very sympathetic to my feelings of uneasiness and managed to convey to me that they were peaceful and meant no harm. Rama came back to the spot where we had been sitting on our blankets and sat next to me while the men sat by themselves some distance from us. They were doing their spiritual practice, Rama said. Rama wanted to continue our session, which was to prepare for another out-of-body trip, but I couldn't concentrate. I was still too freaked out from the realization that only a few hundred yards away sat strange-looking creatures from other worlds. Despite all my studies, my ananas and anionites were vibrating at an extremely uneven frequency. I wasn't in the mood for astral travel at that moment. While Rama went in and out of her body, I sat up, keeping an eye on the creatures, who, after a while, got up and walked away, disappearing behind the hill. About a minute later I saw a flying disc raise from behind the hill, then vanish into space. Rama said, matter-of-factly, that it was her transportation making a routine check. That night we went to the movies, had our nightly swim and laid down to rest. Tomorrow I was going to find out about one of the greatest nations on Earth. After we returned to Akaya, Rama said there was real reason to be fearful of beings from outer space, because their mission on this planet was peaceful. Still, it had been kind of scary to see them and actually exchange thoughts with them. Despite all I had read and that Rama said, I was still afraid to get close to them. Somehow they reminded me of all the associations I'd had before now to awesome monsters, invasions, and interplanetary wars. Rama said the reason she had not taken me to meet her brothers sooner was because she sensed a lack of trust on my part. If she had done it sooner, I probably would have gone into shock. She promised to take me to them again, but only when I was calm and unafraid. She said while I was fearful and jumpy I would gain no benefits of what their minds could tell. Yes, I replied. I know what you're saying. But you must realize how extraordinary this is for me. This frightens me. Do you remember when we first met? Yes. You were so curious and intrigued about where I came from, and my activities, that you said nothing could shock you, because you were a tough character. Yes, and you kept stalling me deliberately. I had to, because I knew you were the kind of person who could handle my being from another world, but not quite as soon as we met. You needed time to reason out the whole affair intellectually. I think your friends are definitely from some other world, but you, I'm not so sure. Maybe in order to unburden my feelings I'm kind of expecting you to come out and say you made this whole thing up because you wanted to get your kicks out of it. You'll never get that out of me, because it isn't true. I've been very honest with you from the beginning, but I had to put up with a lot from you. This afternoon, when you saw my brothers taking off, your curiosity was greater than your fear, wasn't it? That's right, it was. Then why don't you make an effort to overcome your fear? You already know that some of the greatest civilizations that have existed on this planet were founded by people from other parts of the universe. Till try, but you have to understand that this sort of conditioning has been deeply imprinted in me by the society I live in. I'm quite aware of that, but you're also aware that your Western civilization is messed up as far as informing the people about what's really going on. What do you mean? I think our society is one of the most wonderful nations in this world. It may not be perfect, but it's certainly the best. Why? Because the average citizen possesses two cars and all of the modern conveniences? No, I'm not basing my judgment on that, nor upon the standards of living of our average citizens. It's more the way our government protects its people. We have free elections, and the principles of democracy in action. We don't have revolutions or a military government. Besides, hold it right there, Mr. Patriot. I promised you I was going to tell you about a nation in this world, so we won't waste any precious time talking about democracy or things of that sort. I understand your loyalty to the country in which you live, but you're much too naive and idealistic. When I said we'd be talking about a nation in this world, what I had in mind was how a nation would take an active part in the final days of Armageddon. Oh. I thought we were going to get into a political discussion. That's one of my favorite subjects. Can we use names here? You're aware, I'm sure, that in my country there is absolute freedom of the press. Are you kidding, Chicho? Look, Rama, if you know something I don't, I've asked you many times to level with me, let me in on everything. How could you say there is freedom of the press in a nation that hides so much from its news media? A place where a group of people sitting around a conference table decides what people can or cannot know? Don't you know there is censorship of the news? How can you say that? Listen, if you don't believe me, my feelings won't be hurt. But I think you ought to know a few things just for your own information. Don't think that I'm instigating it, I have no political motive for saying these things. If you say there's censorship of information on UFOs, how come so many books have been written on the matter? Nobody's made any kind of effort to stop them. Because censorship and the silence group work in totally different ways. When George Adamski wrote about his meetings with people from other planets, he was able to publish his book without any problem, that is, concerning the mechanics of publication. Then how do they work? They don't take the time to investigate, and the media conditions people to believe that anyone who sees UFOs are crazy. You get the feeling that the media leads you to believe what someone wants you to believe. Ask yourself this question: is there any reason why UFOs should not be a well-known fact? I guess there's no answer to that one. You bet there's no straight answer. Even though people see these things every single day. Did you know that, according to a Gallup poll taken last year, 15 million Americans claim to have seen UFOs? No, I didn't know that. The Gallup poll, you say? You heard right. The Gallup poll taken in 1973. You respect that, don't you? By now you know that if the things you tell me can be corroborated, I have no choice other than to accept them, or at least really consider the possibilities. What about the random sampling of the population when these polls were taken? How about people like airline pilots, police officers, radar experts, astronauts and loads of reliable people who had the gut feeling that if it wasn't an airplane, a helicopter, meteor, balloon, then what else could it be? A UFO. I'm going to check this out thoroughly. And if it checks, then am I supposed to believe that my nation is hiding something from its people? You understand 100% correctly. In the same way that they hide UFO information, they also hide other things. Like what, for instance? Like wars. I don't think any nation is under the obligation to make military affairs public. I guess you're right. Any nation in this world could be at war and its people would never even suspect it, especially if the war is far away from the homeland. All one would have to do is condition the media to inform the people only of certain things, and not others. But how could they do that? It's an easy task. Very convenient and concerned. There's one news media organization that compiles the news that is computerized and sold. This organization has the power to create trends, new modalities, the ways of being accepted. They tell you what to eat, how to dress, what brand of coffee to drink, what drug to take for your next headache. They condition people to take drugs. An entire generation could be hooked, and your news media would tell you nothing about it. Don't you remember when I told you there is a group of people deciding what is secret and what is not?
Yes, I remember.
Well, that's it. They have the knowledge, and could voice an opinion. But they're absolutely forbidden by their networks.